You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in a beautiful sunny Cocoa, Florida today. We're heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and worldwide live everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
That's right. All over the World Wide Web, you can go to 1510wwbc.com. And hit that listen live button and you will get us on any one of your listening devices live and in person. Or if you'd like the archive of the show, we have it on 1510WWBC. You just hit that on demand button and pick the date. It's also on our website, SitaMediaInc.com, and also on our Facebook pages, which Sita's is the first one. And then all the other ones, Sita Media, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Of course, my website as well, so.
Yeah, you've been posting and it's beautiful.
Yeah. We're getting more folks too.
Yeah. Well, you know what I noticed? If you put something serious on social media, nobody really cares. But I just put in that I cut the grass and you see what happened. People are responding to it, right?
Exactly.
It's like people don't want to be very serious on social media at all. They want to, it's their happy place.
Well, I'm hoping it's becoming a happy place again for people.
Well, you know, my friends usually are. They like to hang out and watch me dance. And then my daughter said, Mom, you're dancing on a video on TikTok. Would you be so kind to take it down? You look drunk. I'm not drunk. I was in my uniform. I just got home from work. And she's like, well, somebody sent it to me. I'm like, who? Tell me who. I could delete them.
You're right. Exactly. So it's fun. So a lot of fun.
Danny got a chuckle out of that from the girl who don't even drink but 2 ounces of Moscato. So... Again, Ellen, we have a wonderful show planned today. We have 2 segments. Our first segment, I told you the other day I read this really good book by this author who's a lovely lady sitting next to me, Paula Wilson. Mm-hmm. It's called Finding Out, Coming to Terms with Adoption, and so much more. And I read the book and I learned more from this book about history than I've learned before, about the Philippines, about the Trail of Tears, the Seminole Trail of Tears. This Tuskegee Airmen. I hope
Tuskegee.
I see
Airmen.
Tuskegee Airmen. So many things. I also learned about my own insecurities as well with, colorism, being different, but also loving the United States and becoming a naturalized citizen. So many things in this one book. So we're going to be speaking with Paula in a little bit. And Paula brought her friend Olga. They drove in from Orlando. So welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. And our second segment, we have a repeat guest. Deborah Grassman is going to be calling in from Opus Peace. And we are going to be speaking a little bit later about some workshops that they have going on. And we'll speak a little bit about soul injury. You know, she talks to us a lot about soul injury and violence against women and how to heal your body from inside out when something like that happens.
Remember the last time she was on, we got a lot of folks that were asking questions, so it was great.
Yes.
But one quick thing I wanted to talk about. One of our sponsors is having a Evening of Elegance, dining, music, dancing, and live entertainment for the group with Bacasca. They're having an Islands of the Caribbean gala. It's called One Love. It's going to be Saturday, October 14th from 5 to midnight. There's a cocktail hour from 6 to 7, and you can get tickets. Holiday Inn Vieira Conference Center is where it's going to be held. And you can get tickets by going to Bacasca, B-C-A-S-C-A. And if you have any questions, you can certainly find out from here on the show, and we will be able to get you tickets. Seed, I believe you bought a table, correct?
Correct.
Yes. We've got a couple other tables that are coming.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that everyone pays me for those tickets that I paid for the whole table. And if they don't,
right?
Yeah, well, it's okay. But I just wanted to tell you, I'm not sure if you got a hold of Angie at Opus Peace, but they wanted to merge their call with Dr. Joe Jones, who is also going to be calling in to speak with Deborah. So we'll see how that. So that's second segment.
Yep.
So first segment. So my dear Paula, boy, you are amazing. So you live right here in our backyard in Orlando, Florida, and you wrote this beautiful book. You certainly make a compelling argument for adoption. But with that adoption comes a better life for a little girl who was orphaned in the Philippines. But it also opened up your mind to a whole new world of so many things that came with this mind, body, and spirit that you were born into. So talk to us a little bit about your retirement, what you did for a living, and now you're a published author, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you for that introduction, Sita. I couldn't have asked for a nicer, kinder way of being introduced. Again, I'm Paula Wilson, and my book is Finding Out, Coming to Terms with Adoption. My mother would always tell me, growing up, don't forget your heritage. Your Philippine heritage, my Seminole Indian connection, military life, and a community immersed in positive Black experiences. What my mother told me provided the framework for my most challenging venture late in life, after I retired, of writing my book, Finding Out, Coming to Terms with Adoption, which is available now on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Okay. So now, and you wrote the book in what year?
I wrote the book in 2022. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been working on it much longer, that's when it got published.
Right. And where was your happy space when writing this book? I mean, where did you find that you would sit down and just think and write? Or did you journal before you started to write?
The longest piece of work I ever wrote before writing this book was a 15-page thesis in college, which was eons ago. But looking back over my book, I find that half of my book is a foundation that I put together for my readers so that going forward, they will have an understanding of the places, people, events, both historical and personal. So as I reveal these things later to the readers, they already know what I'm talking about. The foundation, of course, is based in the Philippines, starts off in the Philippines because, after all, I was the first Philippine refugee adopted by American family after the congressional passage of the Refugee Relief Act of 1953. And this opened the way to my parents being able to adopt a child while they were in the Philippines.
Right, and your book is very relatable to so many adoptees. Many people who pick this book up, at first, you're like, well, I wonder if I could finish reading this, but it took me 3 days because I wanted to know more about you. I wanted to learn more about your wonderful mom, what beautiful memories. And your dad, he broke a lot of barriers. Let's talk a little bit about that day that someone saw you in the orphanage and decided that you were going to come home with them and be loved and taken care of.
That's a very touching part of my life and the start of a new beginning. My mother, Grace Hicks, went to Manila and visited an orphanage as a recommendation by her house girl. We call them house girls, the ones that helped in the home, a domestic that helped in the home. And Rita took my mother to this orphanage in Manila, a very big orphanage.
And your mom, it was hesitant that day. She wasn't sure she was going to go.
My mother and father had many discussions about this.
Your
my
dad
father,
wasn't too keen about her going.
No, he knew what he would have to do if my mother decided to
bring home
through
a kid. Yeah.
Yes, it would be quite
yeah, because he tried to talk her out of it.
Yes.
But your mom was determined.
He would have to go to the base commander, get permission, his direct commander, get permission, and then because it was a Philippine orphan, they would have to go through the Philippine court.
A lot of red tape.
Yeah.
Which they did end up going to the court anyways. But keep going. So she went with, I forgot the girl's name.
Rita.
Rita, yeah.
And there were, my mother went to the orphanage and she was amazed to see children lined up, neat and eager to sing their song for her. They called her Miss Hicks. They were very polite, dressed as nicely as they could. And my mother couldn't hold back the tears because there were so many. And I remember this because she would tell her friends her experience of going to Manila. And I would remember her telling these stories to friends that would come to the house. And while the children were singing to my mother, I was sitting way in the back on the dirt ground, off to myself, and she noticed me. And she left the children. They were all saying, Mrs. Hicks, Miss Hicks, you know, trying to get their her attention. Yeah. But she walked.
Well, they wanted to be the one to be picked.
Right. They wanted to be the one because they knew in their heart this could be the new opportunity that would take them from this orphanage and a life doomed to poverty. Because orphans didn't get more than an eighth grade education, if they got that much. If they decided to leave the orphanage, they only had the streets to look forward to. But my mother saw this child, this toddler with just a t-shirt on, in the corner, lying on the ground. She went over, and she was appalled because the child was so neglected. She wanted to
The child had something on her. You had something. I would say it wasn't lice, but was something else.
Some type of infestation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so they put you aside.
They put me aside. The nun said, Miss Hicks, please come away from this child. She doesn't need
She's infested.
To be,
yes.
She needs to be cleaned up. My mother wanted to take her handkerchief and clean my face, but the nuns coerced her to come and join the rest of the children. But my mother kept thinking about this child. And coincidentally, in Congress in Washington, there was a piece of legislation that would decide how many refugees from any number of countries that were devastated by World War II would be allowed to come into the country and the conditions that had to be met. So I was able to come to the United States after being adopted under that congressional act, the 1953 Refugee Relief Act.
Right. But to prepare for your book, you learned a lot about the laws at that time in the Philippines, because your mother had to sign off on you being adopted to Mrs.
Yes.
Hicks. Who engineered that whole thing to find your mom, to take her to court so that legally you could be adopted? I mean, it's unheard of, the amount of research you did for this book. Talk to our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about that, the law and going to court. Your mom and dad, Mr. and Mrs. Hicks, had to go to court to get you to become their child.
Right. I had very forward-thinking parents. So all of the documents and papers involved with my adoption, they kept for me. And as I got older, they turned those papers over to me. I didn't know what to do with them then, but then when I had retired and had time on my hands, I put all this information together, old photos, old documents, memorabilia, my own little writings that I would jot down, and I crafted a memoir of my childhood. And I also went back almost five generations back on my mother's side to tell this story of how I came about. So it was a very challenging time for me because I had to overcome emotion of looking at all these documents, reminding me that I'm not my parents' real child as much as I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
I was their adopted child, but I came to grips with that because everybody has a story to tell.
Yeah, but your story is amazing because, I lived with my mother and father in Trinidad, and I knew that my ancestors came from India, but I never researched as much as you did about my own grandparents, and it made me want to know more about them. But you went back so many generations on your mother's side, and she was fascinating in her own right, and her people were, and so Miss Polly, and so was your dad and his accomplishments. So talk to our listeners so they get to know this wonderful couple What can you tell them about Mrs. Hicks and her historic background? I mean, and they were quite educated, too.
Yes, they were very amazing people, and they come from a long line of very amazing people. My mother is a descendant of Seminole Indians. In fact, her great-grandfather became chief of the Seminole Freedmen. Those are the black Seminole Indians in Oklahoma. There were at least three groups, and the Bruner tribe is one of the black freedmen Seminole bands. And her great-grandfather was the chief of the Bruner band. And he helped guide the Indians from Florida, the Seminole Indians.
This is on your mother's side.
On my mother's side, yes. He was part of guiding the Indians from Florida to Tampa to New Orleans, and then through waterways up the Mississippi and Arkansas River to Fort Gibson in Arkansas, and then on land on to Oklahoma, where they were given Indian territory until it became a state, and then all that Indian territory was up for grabs by anybody.
Yeah, you weave the story like so well, and then you tell it in the end the way it's unique in the way you did it. It's like you're plotting something and you're getting from one point to the other. So the Trail of Tears, who taught you all that? Did you have to research the Seminole Trail, or were your parents the ones who sat you down and taught you all this historical facts?
I never got sat down. I always got tidbits of when groups of my family would get together and talk about things, about the Seminole Indians, about Tecumseh, Indian names that within the family and those who know Seminole Indian history know about, and some of the dance moves and the kinds of foods that we would eat, like sofki and fry bread, some of those Indian dishes that were prepared by my grandmother. I don't know how to prepare them. I wish I could.
Yes, that's another book, Miss Ellen.
Right.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with author Paula Wilson, and her book is called Finding Out, Coming to Terms with Adoption. And it's a fascinating book, and it's so historical the way she thought about the people that came before her and brought them alive in her book. So for you and your mom and dad, so they moved from the United States to Philippines. They adopted you, but their life in the Philippines wasn't as easy either, because they were colored people, according to your book. They had some difficulties as well. And you saw that as a child when you came to America as well. So talk to us a little bit about being different. Like you said, when you were little, you were the only dark child in school. And this was in the Philippines, correct?
This was in
the American base of the Wyoming.
In the first grade, I was the only dark-skinned child throughout the first through 12th grades in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And I was not met with open arms. In fact, I was not allowed to play on the playground with the other children because they did not want to be on the same equipment if I was on there. So they had their teachers separate me from them. So all the rest of the year, I had to play in a little corner of the parking lot where there was only gravel, and I played by
myself.
One time I had a friend come over because the children didn't want to play with her either, and she asked if she could play with me. I said, of course. She said they don't like to play with me because my clothes are old and they don't like me. And so I said, well, I think that's okay. I think your clothes are okay. And then she also said, I live on a reservation, and they don't play with kids who live on a reservation.
So this was not just elementary children or junior high. This was right up to high school.
This is just the first and second grade kids that bullied us into not participating in anything they did.
And the bigger story, the teachers that allowed it to happen.
Yes. Well, but look at the time.
Yeah, I understand, but I'm just saying that, yeah. You know, it's reality is that it wasn't just the kids. It was the teachers that manifesting that to happen.
Allowing
it to happen.
So you lived in quite a few states as well. And you, along the way, living in the states, you met a lot of your relatives that had scattered all over the United States as well. Talk to our listeners about some of the states you lived in, and when your father was stationed, you and your mom had to live with your grandmother for a while as well.
Yes. You know, looking back at my book, I think of these different places as portals. And within each portal, there are windows. And when I open the windows, I introduce the readers to different places like Denver, Colorado, living there at the zoo, mm-hmm. Cheyenne, Wyoming, Shawnee, Oklahoma, Seat Pleasant, Maryland, many more places, including Clark Air Base. So these are portals in my book, and I introduce very significant people and events. Once we left Cheyenne, Wyoming, my father went to train in Chanute Air Force Base in Illinois, and my mother and I went to Denver, as you said, and we lived a couple blocks from the zoo. I attended Catholic school, but at night, I was troubled by the sounds of wild elephants and lions and bears, and I had to figure out where I was going to hide in case they escaped. But otherwise, my grandmother's home, which is 2031 Franklin Street, was one of the portals, and I describe it intently with the decoration, the style of the home.
And you were scared in the nights. I felt very sad for you. So for our listeners who are tuning in, Paula Wilson's book, the story begins in the Philippines, where a black service couple are stationed, and it's 1001 reasons to remember those days for you and for them as well. And you take the reader along the way of this journey of being adopted, and you do make a great argument for adoption, but it comes with a lot of pain in your case as well. Because as we read the book, we can visualize the Philippines, the orphanage, the couple that loved you so much and wants to bring you to the United States, and then all the hurdles they had to go through to bring this beautiful little baby girl with them to the United States. So talk to us a little bit, if you can, about your biological mother, because you did not know her living in the Philippines. You met her afterwards.
Yes.
You guys went back.
My father got stationed. Well, let me just back up just a bit. While I was living with my grandmother, one of her club member friends came to the house, and I was waiting by the phone, waiting for my father to call. I always like to be the first one to say, hello, Daddy. And my grandmother's friend grabbed my face and pulled it up to her face and said, oh, Miss Polly, that's how she referred to my grandmother, is this your little adopted daughter? I had never heard that I was adopted. I knew what it meant. I was old enough to know that meant they're not your real family. They're not your real parents. You're not their real daughter.
Yeah, and that broke you. Yes.
That tore me up. And I ran up to my room. I was so full of tears, and I cried. I prayed. I asked Jesus, please, please let me see my mother's face. And I cried the rest of the night. And by course of events, it had to be through divine intervention. It was choreographed that my father would be stationed in the Philippines. My mother and I would join him in the Philippines. And one day, my mother and I went off base and was noticed by her former house girl, who she introduced my mother to, the orphanage where I was found. And quickly, you know, like wildfire.
That scene in the book where it spread like wildfire, like they're back. Yeah. And they have that little girl with them. If you want to see her, and before you know it, there's your mom and her son.
Yes. And that's when I got to see my mother. But my mother was weeping, just like when I remember when I was 3 years old, I had to go through a line of women. It was a game of some sort where I would touch each woman and say, you're not my mother, you're not my mother. About a line of 15 women. It was a game of some sort. And she was one who was weeping, and then my mother was at the end. And I selected the right woman, and I said, that's my mother. And everybody cheered. I felt like I won the game. It was one of the few things I remember as a child. And then coming back to present day, when I'm talking about my mother and brother visiting us off base, my mother said, don't look at me because you make me sad. So I left the house, and then they left the house, and that's the end of seeing them.
Yeah, and your words and your illustrations in the book, they carry the author right along from chapter to chapter. How did you get the inspiration to do these illustrations? Did you have some kind of a background in drawing?
I do have a background in interior design, so I knew how to draft. In fact, I drafted so well, I got picked up by an environmental engineering firm to draft construction and facility drawings for wastewater treatment facilities, which is far from being an interior designer, but it's the job that I took, the only job that was offered to me, so I did that for about 15 years. So I have drawing ability. I decided I would draw all of my images that I wanted to include in my book because I wanted to show people that I have another portion of me that can express things.
Right. And the thing is, was it like cleansing of your soul to write this book as well?
It was very therapeutic. Writing about such a very personal topic is very therapeutic. It's gut-wrenching, and I had to come to terms with a lot of my emotions. I had to put the book down for a while, and I had to be encouraged because my relatives are very they were my encouragement.
Yes. And so from what I read, you were the first Filipino to be adopted in the United States? Under the Operation Hope.
After this passage of the 1953 Congressional Act, Refugee Relief Act of 1953, my parents were the first to adopt the Filipino refugee.
So you're a little bit of a celebrity for us.
Well, I shouldn't be celebrated. It should be my parents because they are the ones that...
But just think how your life would have been had they not adopted you.
I don't want to think about
that. Yes.
Yeah. I love the life that I was, that my path took as a result of being adopted.
Although, you know, when you spoke about where all the children were lined up so obediently and disciplined to be adopted, I hate to say this, but you look at kids nowadays, and it doesn't matter who comes to their home, they don't even get up to say hello. And, you know, there are pros and cons sometimes to places, and as heart-wrenching as it might be, I love that discipline, all the children stood up with respect and said a prayer and recited what, you know, it showed me, like, I thought about the Bollywood films, when we would have a hero in the film that grows up in the orphanage and takes care of everybody else because they saw such poverty and they grew up to be very empathetic and sympathetic for the people that they lived with. They all knew they didn't have parents. So to become each other's siblings.
Yes.
And so that sometimes I think it's precious in itself because there are still places in our world where we have to take care of children from unwed mothers or fathers who walked away or, you know, unwanted pregnancies or whatever.
Refugees.
Yeah, and they're people. They're human beings that need to be loved and appreciated. So, Paula, where can we find your book for listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today?
The easiest way to find my book is to actually go to Barnes & Noble website or Amazon and just type in Finding Out, Coming to Terms with Adoption, and you'll pull up my book. It's available as an e-book or a paperback.
Right. And as you were growing up in the United States, and even as an adult, I'm sure you told your story about this scraggly, bedraggled child. Were people listening to you in awe and saying, well, everyone has a story to tell? Or were they like, really? Oh, my gosh. Because you're so calm. God has given you the gift of being calm and collected and able to tell us the story to make us understand adoption and make us want to share that with other people, what you went through.
As a child, I was an only child, so I spent a lot of time by myself observing. I observed everything around me. My parents were very protective, so they were very guarded in what I would do or what I would say. And my mother's premise was children should be seen and not heard, so my opinion was not welcome at the time, but I could be present when adults were
around. She loved showing you off and dressing you up.
Oh, yes,
you
she
were
did.
Her, you were her doll
I
baby.
Was her
she
project.
Was, she was a wonderful mother, and the way she took care of you with so much love, I could feel it. And your dad, too. They protected you all their life. You're so blessed to have found them. Now, you had a lot of cousins, and you always felt different when you were in the company of people as well.
Right. I felt I was just like everyone else until I would pass in front of a mirror, and then I would see what people saw when they looked at me. They didn't see what I thought of myself, but they saw the physical attributes of being Asian, of being dark skin, and having long hair. You know, all the kinds of things that say, this person doesn't belong in our group. But once they got to know me and accepted me as their family, then I was fine being within my family group. It was the outside world that I had difficulty navigating because it took a long time to be accepted outside of my family.
Right, and it sounds like your mind was a little bit traumatized at times with all the different plays going on, with people looking at you, with not being accepted, then finding out that you were adopted, but you were loved. Very conflicted, lots
yes,
of emotions.
A lot of conflicting events. But I wanted to tell my story. I wanted to provide a history, a documentation of my earliest ancestors for my children and future generations. A lot of times, as Black families, we don't know our history beyond our grandparents. So I wanted to provide as much information about who I was so they would know who they are.
Right. And your children, you have children and a husband here in town?
My husband and I live in Central Florida. I have a daughter in Las Vegas, and my son and his daughter live in Mitchellville, Maryland.
Ellen, what a great story.
Really great story. And I wonder, too.
Interesting for real.
Just like when we did our family genealogy, I saw ancestors in me or me in those ancestors and some of the things that I had experienced versus what they had experienced. So I hope, I can't wait to read the whole book. I know Sita got through it in a few days. We are going to listen to our sponsors real quick, and then we have our next guest coming on with Opus Peace. Paula, thank you so much for being with us,
thank
and we'll
you
be right back
here.
After these messages. I told her to call in.
The family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome to MedFast Urgent Care. We are Brevard County's largest urgent care network. MedFast is now open at 7:30 a.m. every day. That's right, 7:30 a.m. every day. We will get you in and out so you can get back to your day. When you are sick or injured, MedFast is here for you 7 days a week. Think fast, think MedFast. With 18 locations, there's a MedFast near you. Call 321-MEDFAST.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads, has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere, Miss Ellen.
That's right, 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your listening devices. Of course, all of our shows are archived on the station's website, which is 1510WWBC. You can just hit that on-demand button and pick by date. Or you can go to our website, cetamediainc.com. You can search by subject or by name or topic, I believe, is the other one.
So, that's right.
Right. And so, then, of course, all of our Facebook pages have everything.
That's correct. And so for our listeners who are just tuning in, Ellen and I sit here on Mondays. This radio station has become part of our living room. We speak about topics that are going on right here in Brevard County, Florida, what we like to call kitchen table topics, or we speak about issues that are going on around our state, in our nation, around the world, whether it's medical, whether it's emotional, whether it's mental, whether it's financial, whatever it is, we give folks a platform on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And today's no different. We just had a really great author on who wrote her book about adoption, and she made a compelling case for adoption.
Yes.
Paula Wilson finding out and coming to terms with adoption. And now our second segment is with a repeat guest, Miss Ellie. It's Miss Deborah Grassman, and she's we know her from Opus Peace,
right.
And our friend Angie Snyder. She helped us to set this up. But today Deborah is calling in, and she's also speaking with us with a friend of hers, Dr. Joe Jones. And their bios, Miss Ellen, look at it, one page long. So I'm not going to read this off because there's so many people hurting in our world, in our state, that we need to find ways to heal ourselves from inside out. And because if we can't heal ourselves, we can't heal other people. And well, we all know folks like that. So I'm going to let Deborah introduce herself again to our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and then we'll speak with Dr. Joe Jones as well. Deborah, thank you for taking the time for calling in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Well, thank you, Sita, for having me back. It's always a pleasure to serve you and your listening audience. So I am a nurse practitioner, worked in hospice for 30 years at the VA. I'm actually a psychiatric nurse practitioner. So today we are going to be talking about sexual violence that is rather rampant in our world right now, and the assaults that often happen with children and children's trafficking, all of those kinds of things. Now, for myself, I have never been assaulted sexually, but what I did see in doing hospice work is at the end of life, oftentimes these issues would surface, and I was certainly there to bear witness to how often that emotional wound of child molestation, either from the victim and the perpetrators too, when people are getting ready to meet their maker, so to speak, at the end of their life, these kinds of issues often surface. So that's been my interest in this topic, and recognizing how damaging sexual assaults are, has been by just bearing witness to seeing it with people that I've counseled, and even in within hospice. So currently, I work with Opus Peace, you mentioned. That is our nonprofit organization that addresses what we call soul injuries, S-O-U-L, soul injuries. And a soul injury occurs when a person becomes separated from their real self, you know, that self beyond the facade.
Yes.
And certainly, sexual assault, there is nothing like sexual assaults to cause soul injuries.
Yes. Well, and I'm glad that you were able to bring Dr. Jo with you as well, because she, unlike you, she's had an experience with sexual violence against her person, her heart, her body, and her soul, and she's able to speak about it. I mean, it's wounding someone when they're least expecting it. It's wounding someone when they don't even know how to put that in words at that time.
Well, and vulnerability.
Dr. Jo said, it took her a while to understand what had happened to her soul, her body, and her spirit at that time. And now she can face it head on and speak about it and try to help other people. So, Dr. Jo, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Of course, Dr. Jo Jones, and I am a registered nurse by trade. I do have a doctorate in health education. I'm a health education specialist. And I've worked in long-term care for a good 40 years before I became acquainted with Opus Peace and soul injury. And when I became acquainted with soul injury, I made a conscious decision to ensure that my decades-long suffering in silence would not be wasted. And that decision set me on a mission to ensure that I reached as many hidden, unheard, and silent survivors of sexual violence as I can. And the way I do that is by speaking out loud my vagina's, my traumatic story.
We got you.
In the first...
you know, your mom told you not to worry about it. Your mom told you that you would take care of yourself. And your mother wanted to silence what had happened to you. Like so many people that we know, that when violence happens within the family, and we all know that you can't put a face in it. It happens to the rich, the poor, anyone. It doesn't matter who it is. Sexual violence, it's there. It's lurking in the shadows. But your mom told you not to worry about it, and you for a while you could go along with that, but then you said that was it. You didn't want to be fake anymore. You didn't want to smile but have this hurt inside of your soul anymore.
That is so true. She did tell me that she never had to worry about me because she thought that I could take care of myself, but I couldn't take care of myself. I was a great actress. I knew how to masquerade my feelings. And
well, you know, you're not the only one. We've had several people on our show that came on to speak about, you know, the facts and the statistics about sexual violence. And we always talk about the root causes, the main causes. And we come away sometimes with the feeling that the key to everything in life is education, right? Is to teach. And sometimes that means using our own personal experience, our life experience, the history of the people that came before us, to teach others how not to wound or hurt someone. And this brings me to our point where Dr. Deborah could jump right in here. You are going to be having a webinar On childhood sexual violence, on soul injury, on secondary wounding, trauma on the brain, PTSD, sex trafficking, which is a huge one, male rape, date rape. So let's talk a little bit about this webinar that's coming up, and let's go through some of the highlights.
Sure. Well, the webinar is going to be on September 15th, and you can go onto our website, opuspeace.org, O-P-U-S, opuspeace, P-E-A-C-E.org, and register for the event. It's an all-day event. It is virtual, and we will be covering a lot of different topics within the sexual violence, as you've already mentioned, but I believe our approach is a bit different, and hopefully people will gain an experience. It's definitely for people who have been victimized, and it's also for other people. I mean, I can guarantee you that everyone knows someone who has been a sexual victim and who is now a sexual survivor. And so we will also be covering how we can help others who, even if we have not been sexually abused, that we can help others who have. Because I really liked how you said it, Sita, those wounds often lurk, and they lurk kind of unconsciously for decades. And that's what happened with Dr. Joe, actually, you know, quite successful doctorate, you know, very acclaimed public speaker and everything for decades until she really went back and kind of unearthed the wound that had haunted her. I think the other thing that's unique about Dr. Jo is she didn't just suffer one sexual assault. She actually, what happened with her was an assault when she was age 4, a different one by a different person at age 12, a different one by a stranger when she went to college, and another one when she was an adult. So she has experienced it from a lot of different contexts, so to speak. And so anyway, the audience on September 15th is going to get the benefit of not only her personal experience, but also the take-home points from that, the learning points from that. And I can guarantee you the audience will really be able to relate, I believe, in a very personal and profound way to the stories they're going to hear and to the concepts.
Right. And Dr. Jo, I love that you have given yourself permission to bypass the fear of other people's reaction to your story. Reactions that are really born out of silence, and you've taken it and with pride, and you're saying, I am going to do this and I'm going to help other people. But how do we help other people to exist on planet Earth, in this beautiful, magnificent Earth, with this pain inside of them? What are some of the ways we can help people that have been victimized sexually? Because, you know, it's globally, millions of people, young people, are victimized, young and old. We're watching in college campuses, most college victims are assaulted by someone they know. We're watching 42% of college women who were raped, they will not speak about it because of stigmatism. You know, there's a stigma. And it is estimated that only 5% of sexual assault victims on college campuses will come forward.
We just had a hazing incident
right
here in Brevard, and it was high school boys.
And here's the other thing, medically, 40% of rape survivors develop sexually transmitted diseases as a result of sexual assault. So this we have a problem here, Houston, right? So talk to us, Dr. Jo. You've given yourself permission to speak about this and educate others. So talk to us. What are some of the ways we can help people?
Well, one of the things we have to realize is that we need to let people, first, education, because like I said earlier, this has been a hidden crime for so many centuries. So education is paramount to offsetting this pandemic. But the second thing is to help people realize that these assaults are not their fault. It's not about sex. It's not about the way you look. It's not about the way you talk. It's about the perpetrator exuding power over their victim. And another thing is to make sure that we broadcast the myth surrounding sexual assault. As I said earlier, sexual assault is not our fault. It's not the way we dress. It's not that we were at the wrong place in the wrong time. It's about perpetrators who are cunning, they're vicious, and they set out to perform this crime. So a big part of stopping sexual violence is education.
Right. It's about power and control, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, Dr. Joe, who are the target audience for the webinar that's coming up? Would there be victims of sexual assault, crime, accidents, natural disasters, bullying, abuse? Your target audience, you're opening this up to the public. Do you all have a lot of nurses, medical people that are attending as well?
Well, we've opened it up to the healthcare population. It's open to lawyers. It's open to social service persons, college attendees, adults. It's open to persons who may know someone who experienced a sexual assault. And like Deborah said earlier, there may be people out there who you don't think were involved in the sexual assault, but in actuality were. So if you feel like you might want to be the one to help a person who was involved in sexual assault, this seminar is for you.
Right. And for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're speaking with Dr. Joe and Dr. Deborah Grassman. Deborah was on a show before with Opus Peace. And I have to say, Deborah, you know, when you spoke to us last time, we had spoken about soul injury. And we talked a little bit about the unmourned loss and hurt, the fear. You know, so many people don't understand, you know, unforgiven guilt, the shame, the loss, the hurt, when your soul is so helpless and they lose our control to find themselves. Can you talk to our listeners a little bit about the mission of Opus Peace and how you have been for years helping others to heal from inside out so that when you heal someone, they can view life differently. They can have a lease on life, let go of the bondage and the slavery that has taken a hold of their mind, body, and spirit.
Well, you really identified a lot of the causes of soul injury. So we identify three causes of soul injury. The first is unmourned loss and hurt. So I want you to think about sexual violence and a victim. And you can, even if you haven't experienced it yourself, you can imagine how much unmourned loss and hurt there is going to be left behind. After the assault is over, the assault isn't over. The residue can just go on and on. So how do we help people with unmourned loss and hurt? Well, we help them, we validate that loss, and we help them to mourn that loss, to externalize it so it doesn't become internalized. It doesn't become unconscious. The second thing you mentioned was unforgiven guilt and shame. What I have seen, what I have directly witnessed over and over again, is that victims carry a lot of shame. And oftentimes, if this happened in childhood, children have an uncanny ability to think that they're the cause of everything. So therefore, they offer a lot of shame. They carry a lot of really irrational guilt, thinking that they were the cause. So a lot of our work in releasing shame and irrational guilt is helping people sort through what they were responsible for and what they are not responsible for, and then helping them connect to that deepest part of themselves. And then the third thing you mentioned was fear of helplessness and loss of control. You know, when you are being victimized during that time of the assault, you feel utterly helpless. And that is an awful feeling. And oftentimes what happens is after an assault, people will think to themselves, I'm never going to let that happen to me again. I will never let myself feel so vulnerable and so helpless again. And so then they become overly controlling, trying to control everything to make sure it doesn't happen. Which is totally understandable.
Well, and you know what? Well, speaking about sexual violence, Ellen is correct. We just had an incident here at one of our high schools with hazing, which is for another show on another day. But, you know, we teach people and we say no is no. But the thing is, I think we need to expand on that and educate our people, whether it's young, old, rich, poor, black, white, no matter what walk of life, that sexual violence refers to any sexual activity where consent is not obtained or freely given. Sexual violence occurs when someone forces or manipulates someone else into unwanted sexual activity. And this can include rape or incest or date rape or acquaintances rape or unwanted contact. And I think we as women, we owe it to the people that are going to come after us and the people who are living on earth with us today to do our part, sit at the kitchen table, sit at dinner, talk, educate our young men and women that respect for each other is of utmost importance. And I think Ellen has a great question for you since the segment is coming to an end.
Right. We just posted the workshop information on our Facebook page, so I want everyone to go to that. But I want you to tell our listeners one more time about the workshops that are coming up, because you have a couple. This one particular, the sexual assault one, is CEUs and so forth. But you do have other education programs available as well, right?
We do. In fact, we have a whole online learning system called Masterpiece that's available for people as an educational resource as well as our live workshops that we do. But yeah, we also have an institute that we will be doing in October. It's a 4-day institute if people are interested in taking a more intensive approach. And then we provide them afterward with resources where they can actually use media resources to go out and teach others and educate others on soul injury and, you know, the holistic tools to recover from soul injury. So we have that available as well as the September 15th. The September 15th event is a one-day event that Dr. Joe and I will be doing together. The Institute is a 4-day event that happens in October. And then the Masterpiece Online series is, you know, individually used. You know,
well, and these messages are so important to get out to all of our listeners as well as our listeners' families to make sure that they can participate.
Right. And, you know, Ellen, when we heal our mind, body, and spirit and our soul, only then can we become wholesome again and give back to the world. And, of course, we've spoken to Deborah before about forgiveness as well. Deborah, can you give us a website for soul injury as well before we go off air quickly?
Yeah. It is, well, you can go to soulinjury.org, soulinjury.org, or you can do Opus Peace. That's the name of our organization, OPUSPEACE.org.
And we've,
way, and you will
and we've posted all that information on our websites and so forth, but we have got to go get off air. We will be right back next week, 1 p.m.